Well, we're back, and today's lecture is on World War I and the causes of World War I for not only the world but also the United States. You know, a couple of causes for the Great War was this increasing feeling of nationalism taking place in the 19th century. Most people feel like, and a good many scholars feel like, that World War I was a completion of some of the old hatreds from the 19th century, and that the 20th century could begin not in 1900 but in 1918, after World War I ends, or the Great War ends, and the collapse of the great empires from the 18th and 19th century. So nationalism, old empires, okay, good example, the Ottoman Empire, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the old style governments of, you know, monarchies and leaders and heirs to thrones. Good example, you know, the fact that Franz Ferdinand was heir to the Austro-Hungarian throne, and the Austro-Hungarians lorded over peoples of Eastern Europe. And also the alliance system. You can kind of think about a conflict or a fight that might develop in the commons area where, you know, one person says, I think I'm going to go take care of that guy, and somebody behind him says, well, if you go try to take care of that guy, I'll have your back. And so that alliance system is going to be a major cause of what a lot of historians today simply call an accident, the Great War. I think that's a decent term, but it's a heck of an accident, because it kills 18 million people worldwide and at least 9 million civilians. The alliance system also led to an arms race. This is a time when a lot of countries feel like their men and the new weapons of war could turn the tide of war, somehow shorten the war, or shorten a war. So something to think about, okay, when we're thinking about the Great War. The Central Powers was one alliance, and that was Germany, Austria-Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire, as well as Bulgaria. And then the Triple Entente were the Allies. The Triple Alliance was often called the Central Powers. The Triple Entente was basically called the Allies, and that was France, Britain, Russia, and eventually Italy and the United States. The Great War started because of the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. Like I told you previously, he was heir to the Austria-Hungarian throne. He was murdered by Serbian nationalists in Sarajevo, which was just a beautiful city. And Germany is going to give Austria-Hungary support. Some people call that a blank check. Okay? And what happens over a period of a month in the summer of 1914 is a chain reaction. And Austria-Hungary will eventually attack Serbia. Serbia will be backed by Russia. Germany will begin to invade Belgium. And because Belgium is a neutral country, France and Britain had pledged support to Belgium. And so within a matter of days, in August of 1914, you have several countries plus their colonies. One of the things that had occurred is that the Germans had developed something called the Schlieffen Plan. And the Schlieffen or Schlieffen Plan had been developed by about 1905. And Germany felt like in the next war they would be able to invade Belgium, and in any kind of conflict would probably be able to win in about 42 days. So they already had their plan in place. In thinking about a weapon that could be used to shorten war, you know, the Germans had also developed the machine gun. Ironically, the machine gun, a weapon that is seen to shorten a war, is going to help to prolong war in the trenches along the Western Front between 1914 and 1918. Germany desperately wanted to defeat Russia first. That way they would not be facing a two-front war, but that's exactly what happened. And the Allies want to win quickly as well. When the Great War broke out in 1914, the United States pledged to be neutral in thought as well as deed. That's going to be very hard for the United States to do because there were Germans in America who supported the German government, who some will leave America and go fight for Germany. There were Irishmen living in urban enclaves such as Chicago and New York who definitely did not support the British in their efforts in the Great War. Going to be very hard for America to be neutral in thought as well as deed as a result of the great immigration population of the United States. But over time, there'll be sympathy for the Allied cause. And there are several things that create sympathy for the Allied cause, and that is the fact that Germany is going to begin unrestricted submarine warfare. And in 1915, an American ship, the Lusitania, a British ship, the Lusitania, will be sunk by a German submarine, and 128 Americans will be killed. And even though they had been warned not to travel on ships at war, there's a great outcry in America against submarine warfare. So Woodrow Wilson will eventually write the German government after a French ship, the Sussex, is sunk, and he will receive the Sussex Pledge from Germany not to partake in unrestricted submarine warfare. However, by 1917, the Germans are forced, because of the mining of the North Sea and the lack of food and lack of things reaching Germany, they will be forced to bring back unrestricted submarine warfare. Woodrow Wilson is going to pledge in the 1916 election to keep us out of war, very much tried to continue to keep America neutral. However, American banks were loaning England and France money, and in turn, England and France were shipping that money back to the defense industries in the United States. So one of the things that we're going to see as a result of the Great War is that America is going to be moving from a debtor nation to a creditor nation. Okay, so just some things to think about as we go through here. But there are three main causes for America's eventual involvement into the Great War, and one is that unrestricted submarine warfare. Good example of the sinking of the Lusitania. The other is the unrestricted submarine warfare itself and the failure of the Sussex Pledge. And the other one is the Zimmermann Note. And this was a German telegram that was going to be sent to Mexico. The telegram was intercepted by the British. And basically the goal of the Zimmermann telegram from the Germans' point of view was to try to stop America mobilizing for war in 1917 by promising that if the Mexican government worked to stall America's efforts at home and to prevent them from mobilizing for war, that the Mexican government would get back much of the land that had been acquired by the United States from Mexico in 1848. So, unrestricted submarine warfare, Zimmermann Note, and the sinking of the Lusitania are your three main reasons for America eventually going to war after Wilson wins re-election. And in April of 1917, just a month after his second inaugural, Woodrow Wilson will ask Congress for a declaration of war. You know, what had happened between 1914 and 1917 on the Western Front is that you had trench warfare, basically across Western Europe. And trench warfare was ghastly. In 1915, the Germans will use poison gas against Canadian troops. It really scared everybody. Living in a trench, you could be shelled for a week on end or more. You began to live in holes underground. You might suffer from trench foot, which was basically just fungus eating your feet off. You had massive amounts of barbed wire. There was a Scottish man by the name of Gilly, and he develops a suit of camouflage to enable Allied men to go through no man's land, which is this space between the trenches of the Allies and the Central Powers. You had all kinds of new weapons: the tank, the airplane, the flamethrower, the potato mash grenade, trench diggers that could, you know, dig all manner of trenches. And officially, this is the last war for horses and elephants and pigeons to be used. You used horses for a cavalry charge or to haul equipment. You used elephants to, again, to haul equipment. You especially used pigeons to carry messages. And arguably the most famous pigeon was gifted by English ladies to an American unit, the 77th Division. And the 77th Division in the Argonne Forest will be, in 1918, will be trapped. And they're down to their next to last pigeon. German snipers love to shoot pigeons because that meant the message was not getting out and back to headquarters. And Cher Ami, who today is stuffed in the Smithsonian Museum, makes it back to headquarters with basically the equivalent of one eye, one wing, usable wing, and one foot. He had been wounded, but he made it back to headquarters, and he revealed the location of men, American men, who were surrounded. And it's a great story, great movie called The Lost Battalion. You know, today, with our myriad of wars, there have been several lost platoons and lost battalions over the years. But there's no question that things like these new inventions just added time and especially added death to the war. You know, in 1914, British poet Rupert Brooke wrote a poem, and the lines of the poem start out, "But God be thanked that he has met us at this hour." You know, the Great War is going to be seen by a lot of people as some kind of cleansing event, some kind of really big event that's going to turn the tide of world history. And it did, but not in the ways that some people like a Mr. Brooke anticipated. So by 1917, the United States is in the war. This is not to say that during that time of neutrality that Americans stayed at home. American nurses from Ivy League colleges, you know, left and went to be nurses in the Red Cross and other places. American men, a lot of them from Ivy League colleges, violated neutrality and went to fight for the Allies. As we said previously, you know, people of German citizenship did the same thing in America. They left and fought for Germany. What did Woodrow Wilson really want when America went to war? And that was to have peace without victory. In other words, that America would enter the war to make the world safe for democracy. And that becomes very, very important. It becomes a very important goal, and we know that Woodrow Wilson will construct his 14 points, his plan for peace without victory, as a way of thinking about a new world order, making America and the world safe for democracy. How did America change during this time? Well, you had food campaigns. You had meatless Mondays and wheatless Wednesdays as a way of conserving for the war effort. You have in 1917 a Selective Service Act that requires men to register for the draft. You have in 1917 an Espionage or Sedition Act. In 1917-1918 you'll have the Espionage and Sedition Acts that will, you know, force Americans to look out for spying. It will imprison Americans for speaking out against the war or saying something seditiously against the government. Very important court case about that we may talk about in our next session. The Selective Service Act of 1917 drafted over 3 million troops. Recruits were trained for about 9 months and they went off to the war effort. And once you went to the war effort, you became a member of the American Expeditionary Force and you were considered a doughboy. Not a doughboy of the Pillsbury kind, but a American soldier, young, fresh, arriving into the carnage of Europe, and you're bringing food to the starving French people. So hence the term doughboys. The American Expeditionary Force, or AEF, was led by General John Pershing. General John Pershing had led troops during the Spanish-American War, African-American troops to be exact, and his nickname was Black Jack Pershing. And General Pershing will make a really important decision early on as American forces are fighting attached to French units. And that decision will be to ask the French if Americans can fight alone as single units. And that's going to be a really, really, really big, important military decision. Well, what was life like at home during the Great War? Life changed as Bernard Baruch will head up something called the War Industries Board. And basically what is the government doing? It's beginning to control industries like shipping, railroads, good example, troop ships. And the War Industries Board, headed up by Bernard Baruch, would set those schedules. What is the big emphasis for the War Industries Board? Mobilizing for war, making sure troops are ready to go to be shipped out to go overseas, making sure there's adequate food rations, making sure that the railroads and shipping runs on time. Okay? So this is a good example of mobilization. But the War Industries Board will take over major industries. Now, this will be great for the country. Like we said, America's moving from a debtor nation to a creditor nation. But this will also cause a lot of wartime inflation after the war as the government tries to go from butter to guns, mobilizing for the war effort, back from guns to butter. You know, from demobilizing. So these words, mobilizing and demobilizing, are going to be words that describe this particular time. At home, Americans grew victory gardens. The neighbors got together and they grew gardens, maybe plowed up a half extra part of their garden just for the war efforts. Daylight savings time begins in 1917, just to give farmers an extra hour in the day to clear their crops. And daylight savings time is something, of course, that we still deal with. Spring forward, fall back. Okay? Americans could buy Liberty Bonds. You had actors and actresses from Hollywood and New York, such as Mary Pickford or Douglas Fairbanks Jr., or just Douglas Fairbanks, selling war bonds. These were certificates that could be redeemed later on. But these were ways that you could deal with the war effort. You had something called a Committee on Public Information, headed up by George Creel, that made signs, that published propaganda on the war, made films. Charlie Chaplin was a great silent film actor during this time, and he's gonna be set into films about trench warfare. Famously, the George Creel Committee, or just the Creel Committee, had four Minutemen, and these were folks who would, you know, stop and give a speech. There were Army recruiters showing up at theaters asking young men to do their bit. And one citizen soldier-to-be said that, you know, that the idea of a last great war, you know, this war at some point was called the war to end all wars. And so that kind of advertising, that kind of progressive appeal is going to lead a lot of young men to volunteer for the war effort. And, you know, again, if you volunteered at certain circles, you could pick the branch of service that you would go into. So that appealed to several men, both in World War I and in World War II. Basically, two things occurred at home during the war effort. Three things. You had, basically, the war is going to stop European immigration into the United States. So you need a good workforce in a lot of these defense industries and auto assembly plants in Detroit. And so this begins something that you really want to pay attention to, and that is the Great Migration. The Great Migration was the movement of Southern blacks to the North, okay, to this area of what will later be called the Rust Belt, in an attempt to fill those jobs in war industries. So remember the Great Migration. And not only were blacks or African Americans in these defense industries, also there was a major movement of women into the defense industries. So these were things that began to began to change the United States as a result of the war effort. And then George Cohen will write arguably the most famous song in America during this time, and it was written in 45 minutes on a subway, and that song, of course, is Over There. And Over There begins to be a term to describe the war itself, the war effort, okay? So we'll stop here and pause and come back and finish with another lecture on the end of the Great War and the Treaty of Versailles and the lingering effects of the war itself.